Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. Actress Catherine McLeod really enjoys shoes, specifically stilettos. To those of you who hear that and make a snap judgment about her character, well, you might want to check out her solo show, My High-Heeled Life, or How I Learned to Keep Worrying and Love My Stilettos, running as part of the Frigid New York Festival at Under St. Mark's. I'll let Catherine explain further. Take a listen.
We'll start the way all my podcasts are. I've realized like there's kind of a goofy theme that has started where I say, you say your name on the mic so folks have a voice to go with the name. So I guess we'll start there. What is, can you say your name on mic?
Sure, I'm Catherine McLeod.
And on you the are the creator slash playwright slash performer.
Yeah.
Of
My High-Heeled Life. Or How I Learned to Keep Worrying and Love My Stilettos.
The keep worrying was my favorite part of the...
Good, because some people don't... nobody said they don't like it. A lot of people are like, they either skip it entirely, like they miswrite it, they just assume it stopped, or they think that I made a mistake. It's like, no, that was not a mistake.
No, it's a strange love reference, and but this makes more sense. You address a lot. in this short one-woman show. So I'm going to start with like kind of the traditional question that I always ask on which is what is the elevator pitch for this show? And then I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to like try to really dig into this because I was fascinated.
I would love to.
Cool. So what is the elevator pitch when you say, hey, my name's Catherine, I'm doing the show?
Well, It's I find, and maybe it's because it does touch on a lot of things, I've found, and I'm also not in marketing, it's really hard for me to elevator pitch this show. And so I have a couple of different things I tell people, but I don't have like an easy, that's something I'm working on, is like how to get an easy, punchy descriptor, because everything I come up with is either like a little too shallow for what it really is, or a little too maudlin, which I think freaks people out. The thing that I have talked about the most is sort of not having to apologize for the... It's a show about not having to apologize for the things that bring you joy and dealing with the world's expectations of you and maybe assumptions about you and whether or not you want to push back on that a little bit. Which, and then, you know, I always say, but it's just a show about shoes, you know, and it is a show about shoes. It's a show about women in shoes and... like living as a, navigating the world as a woman in the 21st century.
And this is autobiographical, no?
Yeah, like, all of it.
All of it, okay. I'm just not going to shy away from it. Like, I'm fascinated by the way the show deals with questions of the duality of things like stilettos.
Mm-hmm.
You even bring up at a moment like this, you say like it's, I'm trying to remember the exact moment where you really hit, like it really hit for me, but you said, I don't wear these as some sort of like sexual power symbol.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
also for, it's for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea of, I feel like this really big circle that goes on in ideas of representation among what are traditionally like feminine things.
Yeah.
Again, I always see it as like this really big circle where it's like, it's not, what is that thing doing? I guess, what is the stiletto doing? And I would love for you to talk about that idea of duality.
Well, it's interesting because I've always been, somebody once asked me, I don't know if it was an interview or just a friend, like, why did you write this show? And so I have this whole, you know, spiel about, well, it started as a school assignment and I was doing this kind of research and I was interested in this. And then really, but what it gets down to is that I am blonde and petite, and I didn't grow up as particularly like objectified or femmy at all. You know, I have a very feminist mother who's like not into clothes. But I felt like the older I get and the more sort of womanly I become, I walk into a room and people treat me like I'm a moron because I have blonde hair and because I like to wear pretty dresses or, you know, not very sensible shoes. And so I am interested in the duality of like, it is possible to be a well-educated, intelligent woman who dresses a certain way. And that, you know, I think for a long time, feminism, big F feminism, sort of didn't allow for that. And then there was a big backlash against that. It's kind of in the 90s, but, and you know, I'm not the most well-read on my women's studies, but I think...
I don't think any of us are, like, looking for a scholarly
approach. No, but you know what I mean? But I feel like the topic of shoes comes up a lot, not just in my show, but it comes up in other things. It's sort of this weird battleground of, like, is it something that women do to, like, oppress themselves, you know? Or are women who do... Are they, like, not intelligent enough to realize that they're being objectified, you know? And so for me, it was really interesting to write, like, no, I'm smart, I get it, you know? And this makes me really happy. I like feeling a certain way, and that doesn't undermine my intelligence or my ability to have a conversation, you know, that you don't have to be one thing. I guess that's what it is. It's the duality of not having to be one thing.
Yeah.
And I feel, you know, no offense, I feel like men are always more than one thing, and women are always one thing. It's like she is this or this or this.
Oh, totally not offended. And I find that to be one of the most interesting things. And that's mm-hmm. You answered that in exactly the way that I kind of hoped you would answer it, just from having seen your show. How does this show, I guess, you can talk about this as like that marketing pitch that you were talking about earlier, or it just in, you know, if you really... However you want to react to this.
Totally.
How does this show help to kind of push back about that demand of women to be only one thing?
Well, I think... So this show started as a short play. And it was an exploration of high heels and an exploration of ideas of self-help and happiness. And I did it a certain way. And it was in the short original version, it was a little more like a lecture. It was a little more like, you know, I was in a suit... It was a lot more sort of intellectual, I would say. And my director and dramaturg, who sort of helped me create and write, saw that early version and then thought, I think it would be really interesting if we set the audience's... Like you say in your writing, we set the audience's expectation for one thing. So we see a woman in a cocktail dress and shoes putting on makeup. And we don't think she's going to really talk to us about serious issues or ideas, you know. We think whatever stories she might tell are going to be pretty vapid. And then things, and what, you know, and then things come out of your mouth that are not, that are thoughtful and provocative. And that there's playfulness and there's humor and there's wit. But that, you know, what we expect when we see you on stage and the way that the first third, I think, of the play really is crafted is it's sort of... shallow is not the right word, but it's a little more removed, and it's not as personal, it's not as angry, it's not as political, and then those things sort of start to bleed in. So I think that's the thing, that's the way that the play sort of structurally addresses it. And then, you know, the one thing that I've struggled with is that people who have really strong feelings about women, and when I say that, I mean women who have really strong feelings about women and what it means to be a smart woman and what it means to be a sensible woman and a productive female member of society, a lot of them have responded really negatively to the show.
I was about to ask, like, how people
that, have... The only negative reactions I've gotten have been from those kinds of audience members. And it's hard, because it's like...
What are they asking for? What are they
want
is
me
their
to,
criticism?
What I've heard directly and indirectly through reading... blog posts and things that I probably shouldn't read because it's damaging. What I've heard is, you know, I really wish that she would come out and say that high heels are oppressive. I really wish that she wouldn't be reinforcing this tool of oppression. I really wish that she... And I guess part of it is that I'm just not interested in hitting the audience over the head with that kind of conclusion. I mean, if you want to think that, fine. And there are times when I totally feel that way. But for me, it's more important to, you know, pose some questions in the minds of the audience members and sort of open up the dialogue, have a conversation. I'm not really interested in a thesis of telling you this is what I think about A, B, and C.
And I am a huge proponent of question. If you... I get into discussions like this a lot with friends about theater, and I like to always say, like, I don't like when you answer things for me. If I know the answer to your theater... then you have failed. I think, like, it's all about opening a dialogue. Isn't theater a place of seeing? Like, and what are you showing me? It's my real question.
And the challenge, too, I mean, you can be too opaque. And I think there are times when, as a writer, it's like, I'm all... Because I'm not... I am a writer, but I'm not primarily a writer. Primarily, I'm an actor. And so I feel still, I'm really learning my craft as a writer and figuring out what that is. And there are times when I'm afraid of being too direct, I think. It's like I really go around it. You know, as a writer, you write around it. And sometimes you need somebody to just nudge you in the way of being a little bit more obvious. Well, not obvious, but direct. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that it's a hard thing, those kinds of criticisms, because you want, those are the people that I kind of want to reach. It's like, but why do we have to be hating on each other? Why does it have to be black and white? Why do I have to fit into your box where I don't get to count? And those are the people who have a really hard time with it.
So you said the show started as a writing exercise. Was it, what was that writing exercise? Because I think, like, really what my question is, why did you, Catherine, decide to write about shoes?
So, it's funny. That's a very, like, I could give you the really, really long answer, but the sort of middle-sized answer is when I was in graduate school, we had to do two solo plays, a second-year play and a third-year play. And in my second year, I had written this play that was a whole bunch of crazy characters and, like, about something from my childhood, but not super personal, and it wasn't great, you know, and I sort of felt like I had done that. And then the third year, it was like, fuck, I have to do this again? Like, I've learned the lesson of the fact that I'm not a solo playwright. And they were like, well, you got to do it. So I just started, I had read this article about the kind of, what would you call it, the business of happiness, the business of trying to sell happiness.
Yeah.
And I had read it and then carried it around with me all summer, and I thought, you know, I kind of want to write into that a little bit. And then I was also, but then I was interested in this sort of idea of, you know, the bimbo who can't get taken seriously, or, you know, looking one way and being treated a certain way regardless of what's actually going on in your brain, and shoes. And so this advisor of mine was like, put those two ideas together and see if you can, you know, weave a thread. And so that's how it started.
So it's like when shoes make you happy and the shoes suggest to the outside world that you are an idiot.
Yeah.
What happens then?
But it's
right?
Like, what assumptions do you make about me based on what I wear? And should I stop because you're making those assumptions? Or should I, like I was saying, like, should I push back? And should I, you know, show my true colors or whatever? Should I show all parts of me? Yeah, and, like, not being boxed in. So that's kind of the beginning of it. And then it's evolved a lot.
It also, to someone who is very interested in theater that is of the moment, it mm-hmm. was very nice that I felt like you were very present. You made direct reference to Ukraine, Venezuela, and Arizona at one moment, which is like everything that's been on my mind as I've been turning on NPR every morning for the past couple weeks. So does the show evolve and change as, like, the stories you say, like, a couple weeks ago I heard blah, blah, blah. Like, are you really changing the show as you move along, or?
Not at all.
No,
There are two sections, three sections, I think, maybe, where the really prescient references change. So that little bit at the end where I talked about Ukraine, up until, like, last week, I was saying world financial crisis, because when I first read it,
right.
That was the thing that everybody was talking about. And then I was like, this
and
is not...
And it still kind of is, but...
It is, but I was like, this doesn't feel as hot for me right now.
Right.
And so, you know, I changed a couple of little things, not every night, but, you know, depending on when the run is happening at that little section. And there's a couple of other ones, like, if there's a reference to the current season we're in, you know. But for most of it, no, last week, most of those last weeks happened, like, 2, 5, 7 years ago.
No, that's,
but
I mean,
think
great,
but I think it's
new
good to keep
lessons.
It kind of, yeah, to keep it kind of,
of course, yeah,
sort of present, so it feels like a conversation. It feels like you've kind of caught me in something. It's like, oh, let's have a chat about what's
and
going on with me right
now. The fact that
now.
I brought it up and asked you, like, if you actually did change it, kind of, I think, shows the fact that it's not something that feels dated. It's not like, I was wearing my flannel through Seattle the other day,
and blah, blah, blah.
Like, it's feels very of the moment. Mm-hmm. I find this a very interesting show.
Thank you.
I don't know what else to say. Like, I kind of want to make you keep talking about it, but I also want to let you go home because it's really cold. So
it is cold.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. This is great.
How many more performances do you have?
We have three more on the 2nd, the 5th, and the 7th of March,
okay.
And they're all in kind of like the six. 5:30, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock range.
I'll post all the dates and stuff. Yeah. This probably won't be up before the 5th. Or it will be up before the 5th, but not before the 2nd,
great.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah. So the 5th and the 7th.
And this is part of the Frigid Festival.
It is, yeah. So it's fun. It's a really fun festival. And, you know, it's kind of a chaotic 2 weeks. It's like a little mini fringe in the middle of the winter. So it's been fun.
Yeah, and the Frigid came back in time for the festival. Thank goodness.
Oh, yeah, because we were really missing it.
Thanks again for doing this, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Catherine, for hanging out on such a cold night to chat about your Frigid show. Har har. And thank you, random bar patrons, for that treat of absinthe before we left the bar at Theater 80. There are just two more chances to catch My High-Heeled Life, or How I Learned to Keep Worrying and Love My Stilettos, as part of the Frigid New York Festival. Tonight, Wednesday, March 5th at 5:30 p.m., or this Friday, March 7th at 7:05 p.m. at Under St. Mark's, 94 St. Mark's Place in Manhattan. Tickets and more information are available at frigidnewyork.info. Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please like it on Facebook, facebook.com/GoCAShow. Follow at GoCAShow on Twitter and rate and or comment on the show's iTunes page. And don't forget, for everyone in the off-off-Broadway world in New York, Go See a Show is helping to spread the word about some great, affordable rehearsal space in Manhattan, just $10 an hour. If your company or project is looking for space, get in touch with me. You can contact me with questions about this affordable rental opportunity, along with any comments, suggestions, praise, or complaints, by email at Robbie, R-O-B-B-Y, at GoCAShowPodcast.com. Until next time, go see a show.
It's great. Thank you. That was a really good interview.
Thank you.